and its aftermath. From the St. George News Radio Weather Center, sunny and 90 today, clear and 60 overnight, sunny and 92 tomorrow. For St. George News Radio, I'm Carl Lamar.
Isn't common sense supposed to be common? The struggle is real, my friends. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
And we have a breaking news story to tell you about. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City. It happened just a few moments ago, apparently. We have very little information available at this point in time.
This is the other tower, ladies and gentlemen. Another explosion at tower number 2 of the World Trade Center just happened live on our air.
Welcome to the Kate Daly Show on this September 11th, 18th anniversary of that day. And I have Melissa on with me, which I'm always grateful. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm always good on Wednesday.
Excellent. Me too. I tell you that this hour will be filled with a lot of things that you probably won't hear too many other places on the radio today. But I always feel like we have to go there because we do a disservice by just, I think, going with what's being said on TV today and not bringing up other issues and questioning things a little bit more. And that's what we're going to do, too. And I want to ask you, it's been 18 years, Melissa. Can you believe this? I was pregnant with my now senior in high school. So he wasn't even born yet. Let me say this. Since then, at the time, I believed everything that I had heard about 9/11. And when we talk about it in this way, by the way, I also want to address this. Thank you to the first responders. The admiration and love I feel for my fellow Americans that reacted and leapt to help and to be there. And even those that joined the military, those that just, I mean, talk about love of country, love of fellow man, and wanted to get into the fray and do something. I honor those people, and I honor all of those victims that went to work that day and never came home. And I know Melissa feels the same way, because our heart is always going to go out, because we saw all of those people meet their peril at the same time, and it was the most horrific thing to witness. It was horrific. And no, I don't think there's a person on the planet that doesn't remember where they were. And so,
Go ahead. For sure. My own recounting of that, I had a 3-year-old and a 7-month-old, mm-hmm. and I was taking my 3-year-old to a medical appointment, mm-hmm. and because I live on the East Coast time zone, mm-hmm. so I had heard it. We were headed into this appointment, and I heard it announced on the radio. Maybe that was a great way to hear it, because my initial thought was, you know, it was just an airplane, you mm-hmm. know, an airplane, right. A little airplane hit a building in New York. It didn't seem
that's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm. Astonishing at the mm-hmm. moment. Mm-hmm. And I went into this office and I told the lady, I said, "Hey, I just heard on the radio that an airplane flew into, mm-hmm. into a building in New York." And she turned on, they had a TV in their, mm-hmm. in their waiting room. We turned the TV on, and we were watching the live coverage, and then it became very obvious that it wasn't what we thought.
And that's what the whole feeling that whole day with everybody was so somber. I just remember everybody just being very quiet that day, everywhere I went.
Yeah, the whole office, we all sat there. I must have stayed. We stayed in that office. We let the kids play. Mm-hmm. They had a little ball pit area, and we let the kids play, and all of us were just kind of glued to the coverage.
Right.
And one of the women in that office had a husband that worked for the airport, and he called her and said, "Hey, there's other planes in the air, and we don't know where they're going."
Oh, wow.
And, you know, just saying that right now, it just gave me chills again to remember that.
I can't even imagine. So what was the first thing? I'm sure you believe everybody just listened, and we took it in, and we started looking at all the information, and everybody had that moment of say, unity. Everybody says, "I want to go back to 9/12 just because of the unity that we felt in America, the kindness, right? I'd rather have even better unity, more unity and truth on this." But I do remember that feeling. And then what opened your eyes? What was the catalyst where you started saying, "Well, but something, there's so many questions. What's going on? There's so many questions."
You know, to be totally honest, I'll tell you, I believed the government story for mm-hmm. a very long time.
Sure.
And it wasn't, I mean, I'm trying to think, My son was, we had already moved, so he was in third grade, and it was even after that. I would bet it was probably, I don't know, 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
that a friend of mine said, hey, you have to read this book by this airline stewardess, this mm-hmm. flight attendant.
Rebecca Ross.
And I was working with another radio show at that time,
mm-hmm.
and we scheduled an interview with Rebecca Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very skeptical. I did not want, you know, I didn't want my world to be disrupted.
Right.
And I knew that she was a 9/11 truther.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I won't put her on the air until I have a chance to talk to her.
Okay.
And I called and spoke with her for about an hour and a half one evening. And the conversation started with me telling her, I find this really hard to believe what you're talking about. The end of that conversation, I was of the opinion that everything required a second look.
Mm.
She had information from her perspective as an airline flight attendant.
Protocols, things like that. Mm-hmm.
That I just couldn't say, well, that's silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was talking about wreckage on the ground at Shanksville. She was talking about video of the Pentagon
mm-hmm.
crash.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking about what really, you know, the phone calls that were made from the plane that
mm-hmm.
with a technology that really just didn't exist at the time.
They couldn't have lasted that long without being interrupted, and they couldn't even reach that far. They couldn't do that. There weren't enough cell towers to be able to go from tower to tower and be able to have that call actually be, you know, actually even last or work. And like she said, we had those little Nokia phones at the time in 2001. I mean, that's just barely when everybody was starting to get a cell phone. And she said, you know, we would have loved them to work at the time, but they certainly did not. So not up in the air like that.
Well, and I think what happened for me
mm-hmm.
was once you pick a hole in the first brick,
mm-hmm.
the whole facade begins to shake.
That's true.
You can't keep believing it. And even now, at this moment, it's very difficult for me to believe that someone put, that was a planned demolition of mm-hmm. World Trade Center 7.
Yep. Yet University of Alaska just came out. And this is after the firefighters associations were calling in July for an investigation into that. The University of Alaska, this just came out where they actually concluded that the fall of Building 7 was not a result of fire. And it contradicted the 2008 findings.
I was talking, my father is an architect.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, I was talking to him, this was years ago now. And he even said that he, and my dad did a lot of reinforced steel building,
mm-hmm.
and he said that all of those buildings coming down was very suspect to him.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. he said, it's just a gut reaction. He said, I don't have any information. And then, you know, like I said, it's hard mm-hmm. for me to believe in a planned demolition, but I watched the video that the University of Alaska put out.
Right.
And you watch their computer simulations, and yeah, obviously, they're right. It couldn't have fallen from a fire.
Nope. And by the way, at the Empire State Building, back in the 1940s, remember this, 1945, that airliner went into the side of that building. The building never went down. There was just a big gaping hole with a plane sticking out on a fire. It didn't become sand. I mean, it's strange that people have a really tough time seeing that. I don't understand why.
Well, I have believed for a long time, it's been mm-hmm. kind of a personal thing for me,
mm-hmm.
that we should always keep our thinking open.
Sure.
We should be fluid. We should always be looking for greater evidence that things are not always what they at first appear. And when I really get to the bottom of mm-hmm. 9/11,
mm-hmm.
it is so much easier to believe the narrative that we've been sold. But if you keep your eyes open, it just doesn't add up. But that's a very uncomfortable place to be.
Well, it's like the plane crash in Pennsylvania. There was a hole in the ground. And not even a door handle. Now, go look, if anybody wants to go do their homework, go look every single plane crash in the history of planes. And you will never find that a plane disintegrates into a hole where you cannot tell a plane was there. It doesn't happen. So when I saw those photos, even my little boy was like, That doesn't, where's the plane? And I'm like, there is no plane, but we're supposed to believe that it disintegrated.
Yeah, the debris field because, from an airline crash.
Yeah, there's debris.
Usually has suitcases and chair seats and
something.
Stuff everywhere.
This wasn't even a door handle. This was nothing.
No, it's just a big scar in the ground.
But people want to say, well, the plane was just going so fast and it was full of gas. I'm sorry, that still doesn't hold true. That still doesn't work for me. So that means that we're being shown a picture and we're being told what to think. But at the same time, I'm looking at the picture going, that can't be. So now we have a big problem with all of the narratives of this story, right?
And you know, the reason that's such an uncomfortable door to open is because of, for want of a better description, the debris field you're left with afterward. Okay, if that's not what happened, then what did happen?
Well,
who was behind it? Yeah. And there's just no comfortable answer.
Well, and I want to preface this with this because I know it's uncomfortable for people to hear this because see, every other show is doing the TV montage. I'm not doing that today. I'm sorry. It's been 18 years and I think there's lessons that need to be learned here. And I think that we as a society, we need to be able to look at this. And if you can get all your questions answered, then great. But if you can't, then we need to have a good conversation about this and really talk about it and be open to talking about it, even if you feel strongly that what the government said was right on the money, because you're going to hear a whole plethora of shows and everybody saying the same exact thing today. But we're not going to do that today because I don't feel like that's honest and I don't think it's good for us. And I think that we all need to have a moment where we go, you know what? Like the families, because the families are still clamoring for truth and they have not been told the truth. And they want that truth to absolutely honor their loved ones. And I feel the same way because a lot of people say, how dare you say these things because you're dishonoring the dead. No, this is honoring them. If there are too many questions unanswered, then we all need to ask those questions. Because if it was my loved one, I'd want the truth. I would want the truth too. No wonder the families are so frustrated. No wonder the families feel the way they do. And I feel like it's the honest thing to do is to ask the questions. And then if they can be answered, then great. But if they can't, then I think that we all owe it to ourselves to maybe look into it a little more, to do more homework, more research, to actually maybe ask to that point of, maybe, just maybe, there's something off here. We'll be right back on The Kate Daly Show.
Balance of nature, changing the world one life at a time.
Like, I'm 40, right? And back in like January, February, I'd like get home, make myself something to eat, blah, blah, blah. My girlfriend works nights. By like 8:30, 8 o'clock, I'd be in bed. I'm sitting there thinking, okay, if this is what the rest of life is like, I'm doomed. Today is day 14 of me taking balance of nature. My energy level's through the roof. It took me like 5 years of hearing it on talk radio to actually try it. The difference is night and day.
Experience the balance of nature difference for yourself. Call or go online now and become a preferred customer, which gives you our best pricing and free shipping. And after your third month, we will ship to you at no charge an additional set of fruits and veggies. This will be a limited time offer, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Right.
Daly this show. Make sure you get to the website, katedalyradio.com. You can also get podcasts there of the show, recorded versions of the show that you can listen to later and share. And then also make sure that you're emailing Kate at katedalyradio.com. And Twitter, it's The Kate Daly Show. Facebook, it's The Kate Daly Show. I put a lot of stuff there. And also go to Balance of Nature. I'm telling you, that's the product. Make sure you're taking it. And try it out. Just give it a try for 30 days. That's all I ask. Go and try it out because I know you're going to love it. Put in the code Kate, K-A-T-E, and get 35% off when you order. Balance of Nature will list all the ingredients, and it is an amazing product. You'll start to feel the health benefits right away, and this is something we need for our immune system, so I am just 100% behind it. Make sure that you get over to Balance of Nature, and then you'll start to really feel good about your health. I've got Melissa on, and we were just talking about the book Methodical Illusion, because it really, that book probably, the whole time I was reading, I went, okay. Yes, yes. These were pieces put together by a former airline stewardess, a long career where she said all the protocols were broken, nothing seemed right, and she started looking into it. Melissa?
Yeah, and one of the things that she says is that there were mm-hmm. not, it wasn't, she said if one airplane had been, mm-hmm. had gone down the wrong path, had not followed protocol, you could understand that, but there wasn't one.
Right.
For none of those airline employees to have followed protocol is extraordinarily strange.
Yes.
And too much it's interesting. I just checked in with Rebecca Roth today.
Oh, good.
Not personally talking to her, but I checked her website and checked some stuff that she's put out recently. And it's very interesting. She's been a hot button person for a while,
mm-hmm.
but her information has now been censored off of Vimeo and YouTube.
Right, Google, everybody.
She's been censored off of Chrome. You can mm-hmm. no longer find her through Chrome.
Hmm.
And so, it to me, when you see someone being that heavily censored,
mm-hmm.
what is it that we're not supposed to see or read?
Oh, 100%. In fact, I want to remind everybody, on this show I've had Gwyneth Todd. And she was, oh my gosh, I think she was on 60 Minutes. She was a whistleblower for 9/11. Susan Lindauer, also whistleblower, who was told that this was going to happen before it happened and not to go into New York, not to go near the towers. And then Sybelle Edmonds, who was a translator. And all three of them on the show a couple of times, actually. And it was very interesting what they had to say. And you can look up those interviews. But all three whistleblowers were amazing. And I there were a couple of things that hit me really hard that I wasn't able to shake. And it was the photo of the plane on the ground in Shanksville, CeCe Lyle's phone call from that plane, where at the end, you can hear somebody say, as she's crying and saying, I love you, to her husband, you can hear a voice say, you did great. You did great. That was mind blowing to me. That was mind blowing to me because then it really turned the entire story on its head for me. The other thing was the PNAC, that is the Project for a New America. That document that came out right before a year before 9/11, and it called for, and this was a lot of people on the right and the left, Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, and you also had many, many individuals on the left too. So it was both sides of the aisle, and it said it needed, and it was talking about the new military, what this was going to look like and why they wanted to, absorb, other places and why they wanted to expand the military over the next two decades. And they said the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic or catalyzing, even like a new Pearl Harbor. They were calling for a new Pearl Harbor event, one that would just stop us in our tracks a year before this. And then in testimony in 2003 or 2008, Rumsfeld said they had absolutely no idea or no training whatsoever or nothing on planes hitting a building like they hit. They were absolutely shocked that this happened. And the very morning of 9/11, what Air Force could have been right there in the sky, right next to the planes like they would have normally been, they were sent an hour and a half off doing what? Well, they were in an exercise where planes hit a building. So they didn't know what was reality and what wasn't. That's too coincidental for me. I'm sorry. And it was a lie. It actually had to be recanted. It was a lie. It was an absolute lie. So by Rumsfeld, because they were actually training for the very thing that morning, but it just so happened training the entire time. Also, the person removed from the Pentagon that morning, the person in charge, there was a new person put in. That was too coincidental for me. And then the phone calls, the length of the phone calls couldn't have happened. And also George Bush's reaction hit me. The fact that we had a passport survive, but nothing else. You know, the passports for the, and we knew who the terrorists were right away. And even Rebecca Roth said this. In fact, let me play this, because Rebecca Roth said this about the hijackers. And this is what opened her eyes. And then I want to hear what opened your eyes, Melissa. But this is what opened Rebecca Roth's eyes. After the phone call thing, she was like, the phone calls couldn't have happened that way. They had to have been either on the ground. And one of the flight attendants actually said upstairs in her call. There was no upstairs on that plane. Maybe in a hangar, but not in the airplane. But this is what she had to say about the hijackers.
The real passenger manifest did not list one Arab hijacker that they later on claimed. But here's an interesting thing I also found out, that the FBI, who claimed they got their hands on the passenger manifest right away, also claimed that four different names that are not part of this whole thing were actually on the passenger manifest. And three of those guys ended up alive. One of them had been dead for a year. And one of them was an FAA employee. They changed that, and that was in that first 72 hours. This is the FBI of the United States hiding this information.
Wow.
Lying about it. I was just like, what?
Yeah. So there was that. And when she finally uncovered that, she was shocked that it didn't add up with the names that they actually had that same day of 9/11. So what hit you? What stuck with you? What did you start really questioning the most at first, besides the towers and that sort of thing?
Well, I think for me, the place where it all begins to fall apart is the forensics.
Mm-hmm.
And by forensics, I mean it's looking at, it's Shanksville.
Right.
It's knowing that there is no debris field there from a plane crash, and there should be, and it's not there. That's a hard piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, and it's a forensic piece of evidence. It's not somebody, it's not the FBI telling us something.
Right.
It's, I can look at that piece of evidence and say, wow, what is that? And Rebecca Roth was the one that kind of said, you know, in flight attendant training, that rang a bell for her.
Mm-hmm.
In her flight attendant training, where they discuss and look at videos and pictures and of plane crashes all the time,
right,
as part of their training, that she thought that Shanksville didn't look right.
Yeah. And I,
that was the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The protocols that were not followed, that one really caused me to stop and question a lot of things really early on. Right after I talked to Rebecca, I was like, you know, that really doesn't make sense.
Right.
Why? The farther you go and the deeper that you get into it, the worse it becomes.
That's so true. So true. I can't say that enough. In fact, flight attendants have weighed in on this, ones that have been around for a long time, and said there is absolutely, you know, nobody had managed to take down an aircraft with box cutters. The whole, on the phone calls, the way they're describing things, the stewardesses, they were calling customer service, which they don't call customer service lines from the plane. They also were repetitive of the same statements over and over again, as if they were reading the statement, not in a panic, just talking to somebody. They kept reading the statements. And when they were asked questions, you got long periods of silence, almost like, should I answer that? That it was a really strange thing, like even just what seat are you in? And so no answer, no answer, no answer. And so there's those little things, but all those stewardesses have said they broke every protocol. They have words they're supposed to say. They have things they're supposed to do, and everybody knows. And none of it was done, like you said. That should be that, even that right there should get people to, I think, question a little bit. If not the towers, which I think is the most obvious one, even these kinds of things need to be questioned.
Well, and I think something that has over time caused me some problem is that no one was ever held accountable for any of the, for anything.
Well,
there was there has never been anybody who was like, wait a minute, we had these Muslim hijackers who were only learning how to fly the plane. They weren't interested in how to land the plane or take off the plane, whatever.
That was another thing. They couldn't have done what they did even going into the Pentagon. There's no way. There, no skilled pilot could have even done that.
Well, and so there was no one ever held accountable. Mm-hmm. There was no airline employee. There was no one
Nothing.
In any of the surroundings anywhere mm-hmm. that said, you know, our intelligence structure failed us. We should have known this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the prelude to a whole lot of that has followed.
Yes. And with the Pentagon, I want to mention that the day before, Donald Rumsfeld did a press, you know, the whole, microphone meeting where he said $2.3 trillion is missing and we're going to find it. And I thought, you know, it's very convenient 24 hours later with 9/11, everybody forgot about that $2.3 trillion. And it's also very convenient that every bit of information that was in the computers that were hit by that plane were rolled into that particular section from another section of the Pentagon. Anything that had to do with that $2.3 trillion destroyed, whether it was a bomb or a plane, totally destroyed, and that evidence is gone. And we'll never know what happened to that $2.3 trillion. And he only announced it the day before.
Well, there was actual gold and silver missing out of the World Trade Towers that's never been recovered.
Yes, Building 7.
And, you know, I don't know that there's any one thing. Is there any one smoking gun?
No,
for me, there's
so
not.
Many.
It's just the accumulation of so much.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a higher and higher and higher mountain to climb.
Right, and Building 7 going down much later. And I mean, I think there's some very obvious things, and that's why I have a hard time sometimes when people don't have even one question. And I'm thinking, have you seen it? Because I don't know how a person could see it and not question.
Well,
the event.
My son, my 18-year-old, mm-hmm. told me last night. He said, many of his friends and people his age, he says, nobody believes anything the government says. Nobody believes that we've been told the truth about 9/11. He said, it's really, to us, very similar to the JFK assassination. He said, I don't know anyone who believes that Oswald was the lone shooter.
Yeah, I don't either.
And so, over time, the story begins to degrade. But it's been the official story for so long
mm-hmm.
that no one, you know, you can't really, you know, you can't publish a book anymore about it.
Right.
Oswald, you know, the JFK thing, there's the official version, and then everything else is just conspiracy theory. But mm-hmm. nobody actually believes the official version.
What's funny is that there are some things that I don't really have questions about. And I go, okay, well, you know, we probably got the right information on that. I'm not seeing anything that even strikes an alarm bell. But isn't it interesting that now well over half of our nation questions this theory and of 9/11, you know, this narrative. And then also on JFK, on these two events, on JFK, it's over 65% that question. That is a whole lot of people in this nation where it doesn't sit right with them. And I would probably wonder why that is. Because, you know, if you were the only one questioning, then I would look at it that way. But nope. You're in the room with a lot of people. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
If tomorrow all things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. I'm so glad you're listening into this. I know this is a little different than what you're hearing everywhere else, but I'm actually proud of that we can do that on this show. And thank your local station, WCGO Chicago. Thank your KZNU. Thank your local station for having this show on, because it's important that we talk about these things. All the questions that Melissa and I just brought up, these are all questions that have never been answered, and that's not okay. And I want to honor those that died. And I can't even imagine what a horrific, horrific death that was that day for those that died. I can't even wrap my brain around it, but I'm telling you that that if we can get to a unity of truth in this nation based on a foundation of truth, can you even imagine what we could do? Can you even imagine what we could get back to if we could stop the cognitive dissonance and really look at what took place that day and then since, with the Patriot Act already being constructed and then, of course, you know, brought right in. It was already ready to go. So, Melissa, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Benghazi, because this is also that anniversary, too.
Yeah, and I'm afraid sometimes that Benghazi gets swallowed
I know.
By 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think the stories are connected.
Mm-hmm.
They both are woeful tales of government incompetence and corruption.
Yeah.
And so I was doing a little bit of reading again about Benghazi. And
we had Chris Peronto on the show, by the way, and you can look up that interview, 13 Hours, the movie. You know, everybody saw that or read the book. We had him on, and it was a riveting interview. Please go ahead. I just wanted to mention
that. You and I were just discussing in the break
mm-hmm.
that the guys that were there that survived
mm-hmm.
have told the story of what happened on the ground. And it's a horrific story
right.
of what happened for those guys. They were caught in a desperate situation. They did the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not faulting them.
Right.
But what they never do address, because I don't think they really knew,
mm-hmm.
was why was Chris Stevens in Benghazi? And what was really happening? Why was the American ambassador sent to a city that by all intelligence reports they knew was insecure mm-hmm. and wide open, that hostile operatives were working in the area, and they knew all of that.
Right.
And into this comes Chris Stevens, the American ambassador, woefully unprepared, into a facility that was unable to be defended.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question that nobody ever asks about Benghazi. And so when you get to the bottom of all of this, sometimes it seems that all roads lead to, well, the CIA and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, arms deals and everything else.
She was the Secretary of State at the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very interesting story. You have to go back and understand some things about Libya. Gaddafi, who had been relatively friendly to the United States up to that point, he had his own brand of socialism for Libya.
Mm-hmm.
He had been working with other African nations to try to raise everyone's standard of living and whatever. And I don't mean to glorify Gaddafi. He was not a great guy mm-hmm. by any means, but mm-hmm.
his people, a lot of his people liked him, and he actually, you know, they really did. So I like that you said that, because, you know, just because he isn't my standard of leader doesn't mean that the people over there.
Well, one of the things that he had done and was in the process of doing was removing Libya from the dollar standard, from
mm-hmm.
the U.S. dollar,
mm-hmm.
and he had quite a stockpile of gold.
Right.
And it is thought, it is speculated, that this is what inspired the angst of the CIA and of the Obama administration, that he could wreak havoc by removing Libya and taking with him other African nations off the dollar as mm-hmm. a world currency. And so there began to be efforts made to destabilized. This is a familiar story, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a leader not going to do what the United States wants, so we're going to destabilize the country.
Right.
And that this is really the end game. There is a guy, Mark Turi, who was an arms dealer,
mm-hmm.
who was later arrested after Benghazi, and he claimed that it was the State Department and the Clinton Foundation tried to frame him to take the fall for Benghazi.
Right.
But he was approached to broker an arms sale
mm-hmm.
Of weapons, including Stinger missiles, to go into Syria mm-hmm. through Qatar.
Right.
And he initially was interested in the deal and then later backed out of it, according to his own story. You got to ask yourself how trustworthy he is.
Well, and then the DOJ drops charges. Obama's DOJ drops charges against him. That was interesting, too.
They do.
Uh-huh. Because he wanted to talk.
In the end, the charges were dropped because his attorneys were forcing disclosure from the Department of State. And what he says, his version of the story was that once he became kind of like, I don't think I want to be involved in this, that the Clinton Foundation was anxious to make money on the deal themselves.
Right.
And that the CIA had also expressed some, like, I'm not sure we really want to do this. Do we really want to put Stinger missiles in the hands of our enemies? And Stinger missiles can take down civilian aircraft, right?
Right.
It wasn't just a shooting war on the ground anymore if we if Stinger missiles are widely available. And that's what Chris Stevens was in Benghazi to do, was to broker this big arms deal on behalf of the Clinton Foundation. And Turi also asserts that some of the information, some of the emails that Clinton was very anxious to erase and eradicate, to bleach bit off of her little server scandal, had to do with that arms deal and Benghazi. She could not countenance that. And if you remember the timing of this, some of this was all coming down right at the election. Her server problem was right before the election. And she didn't want the American public to know that she stood personally to earn millions of dollars through the illegal sale of weapons that ultimately ended up in everybody's hands.
Right.
It wasn't that they just were selling to America's enemies. They went to everyone. It was the Fast and Furious of the Middle East.
Yes. And this is where Julian Assange comes in, because it was the emails, and this is why she wanted him so bad, right? And this is why you haven't heard much about Julian Assange, because he's the one that broke the emails that talked about her having that knowledge. Because, see, Senator Rand Paul called her out and said, it's a felony to lie to Congress. You can get 5 years in prison. And basically, he was saying this. He was saying, you know, she knew, and she says she didn't know about this arms deal, that she lied about it, and the emails proved that to be not so. So he was like, hey, you can get 5 years just for lying about what she did when she testified. So so even he was pointing out this could be the thing that could bury her, to actually get her to prison, because I think a lot of the other stuff, so many are dead around her that you can't do much. But that you could probably have a leg to stand on. And it's interesting that we haven't heard anything about Assange and all of this craziness the last couple of months.
Well, if you remember Hillary Clinton's testimony in front of Congress, when she made her little fist and pounded the table and said, at this point, what difference does it make? Yeah. You remember that little flare-up from her?
Yes.
And so what difference does it make? Why don't we say that about 9/11? At this point, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
Well, because we have inflamed who is responsible for inflaming the entire Middle East. Do I think that ISIS is dangerous? Absolutely. Do I think that the CIA sold them weapons and the Clinton Foundation was involved?
Totally.
Yeah, I do.
Them. Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem.
The CIA admitted it. So, yeah, absolutely.
So we, while the American public is grieving, the world situation. And I don't know. It would be interesting to me. I didn't have time to track it down. What happened to the little filmmaker who was the fall guy ultimately? They said, this man made this negative film about Muslims, and that's what started Benghazi. It's absolutely absurdly ridiculous, but they put that guy in jail.
Yeah, yeah, they don't put Hillary in jail. It's amazing.
And so as I think on the 18 years since 9/11 and all of the things, whether we're talking about Benghazi or 9/11 or even things like Extortion 17, the helicopter that went down, all of these things that have happened, it's caused me to have to ask myself, who are the bad players in this game? And like I said, I do believe that there is a problem with radical Islam in the world. I really do believe that. But I can't hold them solely responsible because I believe there's other bad players and we're being lied to about those bad players.
There's a lot of ringleaders, as it was probably what you're talking about. The ringleaders, the ones that are actually going in, like in this instance, you know, people don't ask what really led up to Benghazi, right? What led up to it? And it's going in and it's, you know, delivering a coup. And it is the CIA going around and doing what they do, along with the Mossad, along with all of these different agencies. We have a lot of ringleaders. We have the elite, the deep state, we have those ringleaders. And so I think that you're right in that. Do I see that as an issue? I can see that as an issue for sure. I think there are segments of that community that I worry about as far as where they're raised and what is going on. But I cringe when I see that these two, 9/11 and Benghazi, that everyone wants to squarely put blame on that and not point out the ringleaders and not point out all of these other people involved. It doesn't take that many. People think that it takes so many people to carry something off. It really doesn't. It takes a couple of people that know the whole thing, and then everybody's given a piece. It's called compartmentalization, and everybody's given a piece, and that's usually how it works. And you might not know all the other pieces, so you think your piece is okay in that, right? So that's why I think it's very easy to, but at the same time, they haven't really gotten away with a lot, have they? Because now we have over 100 good questions, solid questions that have never been answered with 9/11. And then you also have all of this, what you're talking about with Benghazi. So they haven't gotten away with stuff. It's just that the media is not going to sanction what we're talking about right now. They're not even going to open it up.
I think the American public would like to see consequences fall to those who have been the ringleaders. It's my neighborhood in a microcosm. I have a neighbor who's very adept at stirring the pot with everyone.
Right.
Spreads rumors, gets everybody whipped into a frenzy.
There's always
that
guy.
And then when one of those people acts, that person, the ringleader, is never on the scene.
Yeah, they've always left.
They've cleared out. And I think that's what covert operations have been. And I think especially for Benghazi, that's what happened.
Right.
There were people who were stirring the pot, and it wasn't very difficult to bring it to a boil. And when it all came unglued, the only people that were on the scene were Chris Stevens and those guys that were there to defend him. And they sacrificed their lives for it.
Right.
But the people whose fingerprints are really all over it are nowhere to be found, and they're never held responsible.
Right.
And that is, that bothers me.
And if you think that we're not capable of doing these things, or having the ringleaders be from here or our group or a part of it, go back to Project Northwoods, right? The Operation Northwoods, and look up that document that was presented and created by the Joint Chief of Staffs and given to Kennedy, and Kennedy said no. They wanted to sabotage a ship in the harbor. They wanted to blow up the inside of a base. They wanted to sabotage aircraft. They had all of these plans to get us into a war, even shoot down innocent people in a plane, college students, into a war with Cuba. They were willing to go that far, and that was in the 60s. Think about where we're at now. And I think that if people really had an honest moment with what I just said, they would understand that what we're saying is maybe something to, you know, to listen to. Because we're very much capable, even though we think we don't want to be, because they look at it like, oh, well, this is for the greater mission that we have, you know, to accomplish. We're expendable. And I hope, I my heart goes out to all of those victims, the families, everybody that has endured this trauma of 9/11. Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. And Benghazi. Absolutely. And Benghazi. I'm glad she brought that up, too. Be right back on The Kate Daly Show. Don't go anywhere.
Have you been